Blog Talk Radio.
Dramatic music, huh? Well, this is going to be a dramatic show. Good afternoon. I'm Yaron Brook, and this is the Yaron Brook Show, broadcast live from the world headquarters of the Ayn Rand Institute in Irvine, California. And today is kind of a special show. I was going to run kind of a practice episode of the Yaron Brook Show, and launch this on Monday. The regular time for the show is going to be Monday mornings, 8 to 10 a.m. Pacific time. So 8 to 10 a.m. Pacific time, Monday mornings. But given what happened this morning in Paris, I felt like, why not turn this practice show into a real show? Let's run the first show of the Yaron Brook Show as a special dedicated to the issue of free speech. So this show today will be about an hour long, not the regular 2 hours. I encourage you all to listen in on Monday from 8 to 10 a.m. Pacific time to the same URL. And we will start broadcasting this coming Monday and then every Monday from now on until as long as you guys are listening, I will be broadcasting. So I assume everybody listening is familiar with the horrific events this morning where a couple of jihadists attacked the offices of the French magazine, Charlie Hebdo, and I'm probably mispronouncing that, so I apologize, and killed 12 of the employees and policemen and some security guards that were there. They actually, from what I heard, they were looking for people by name. So they were specifically trying to get the cartoonists who had drawn cartoons depicting the Prophet Muhammad, depicting Islam in various ways, and they, in cold blood, shot them. Some, I take it, got away, but 12 people lost their lives, were murdered in this brutal attack this morning. Free speech, this idea of attacking people, using violence against people for what they say, the whole issue of free speech. This is probably the most important issue facing Western civilization today. There is no more important issue for those of us who advocate for liberty, for freedom, and most importantly, for reason, right? Reason implies the ability to speak. Reason implies using, I've got technical problems on my chat line, so that's why I hesitated there. Okay, it looks like it's coming back up. I have to log in. Do you know what our username is? Sorry, guys, but I just lost my chat capability. So there we are. Good. Thank you all for joining the chat, and please write in comments, write in questions, write in suggestions. Call. I forgot to mention the call in is 347-324-3075. So please call 347-324-3075. You can also tweet. I've got a Twitter page up here on my computer. So if you're tweeting about the show, please do so and comment. But I was talking about reason. Reason, according to Rand, is man's basic means of survival. All the values we have, everything that we as human beings produce, create, everything that is of value to us is ultimately a product of somebody's reason. It's a product of human thinking. It's a product of human innovation. It's a product of somebody going out on a limb and saying, I've got a new, better, different way of doing things than everything's been done before. Yeah. And acting on that. So to defend civilization, or to defend individual human life, which is what it means to defend civilization, one must be willing, must be able to defend reason. One must be able to defend one's capacity to think. And one's capacity to think in terms of actual action, in terms of what happens on a day-to-day basis, is manifest in what one says. And people inherently disagree about what one says. Inherently, particularly the innovators, particularly the people who push civilization forward, particularly the people who have something interesting and new and important to say, are offending somebody, changing the world in some way. They're applying reason in ways that it has never been applied before. To defend free speech is to allow for human civilization to march forward. You know, think of Galileo. If not for Galileo, if not for the bravery of people like Galileo standing up in the context back then of the Catholic Church and saying, truth is truth. Facts are facts. Reality is what it is. And based on my observation and based on the best science available, these are the facts. The earth goes around the sun. The sun doesn't go around the earth. And of course, he was brought in front of the Inquisition. He was put under house arrest and so on. And if that had been the state of Western civilization at that point, if they truly had silenced him and been able to silence him, then there would have been no scientific revolution. There would have been no Newton. There would have been no Enlightenment. And there would be no Industrial Revolution. And there will be no Western world as we know it today. So fighting for the Galileo's right to speak is fighting for our right to survive, to thrive, to progress, to innovate. It's fighting for the right of any innovation in Silicon Valley today. It's fighting for the right to be alive. The fundamental right is the right to live, to be left alone, to live free of coercion, to live free of force. And the fundamental in living is thinking. And stopping speech is stopping thought. It's stopping the proliferation of ideas. It's the stopping of the ability of people to express what they believe. And look, most people are not Galileo. Almost everybody is no Galileo. A lot of speech has nothing to do with progressing civilization. But once you give anybody the authority to decide what is and what isn't, you will land up silencing Galileo. You will land up silencing rational thought. Because in the name of protecting the right of the rational to speak, in the name of protecting reason, one often lands up protecting irrationality. One often lands up protecting unreason. But that, we must stand on the barricades. We must fight for all speech. I mean, Ayn Rand went as far as to protect, as to comment and advocate for the right of Nazis and communists to speak, the right of pornographers to exhibit their wares. Not because she believed in communism or Nazism, or not because she thought they had anything to contribute to civilization, or the pornography had anything to contribute to civilization. But she did it out of the belief that you had to protect, you had to defend all speech. If you were to defend human reason, if you were to defend human progress, if you were to defend innovation and civilization. So today, on a day where freedom of speech was so brutally attacked, it is time for all of us to commit to defending reason, to defending individual rights, to defending free speech. And therefore, whether you agree with the particular cartoons, whether you agree with the particular statements of any particular of these authors that were attacked, this is a day to post these cartoons. This is a day to give them voice, to put them on your Twitter feed, put them on your Facebook page. Go out there and give Give these people a platform. Give the cartoonists, if you will, a platform. And I'll get to why this is a powerful tool in a minute. But, you know, this is a battle for civilization. This is a battle for freedom. And think beyond this cartoon. If some of you out there, I'm sure, particularly listening today to this first show, Ayn Rand fans. I mean, Ayn Rand is radical in everything that she says. If we start controlling what is radical, if somebody views that it is possible to control what is radical, you know, we're next on the list. We're next to be oppressed. We're next to have the machine guns pointed at us. The only way we can influence the world, the only way we can actually have an impact out there is by speaking. It's by voicing our opinions, by voicing our radical opinions. And the only way to do that is if our freedom of speech is protected. So in the name of protecting the right of objectivists to speak out, in the name of the right of the ability to anybody of value to speak out, we have to defend the right of free speech at every opportunity, every way. And as I'll illustrate in a few minutes, freedom of speech is under massive attack all over the world by governments, by Islamic fanatics like what we saw, jihadists, by people who voluntarily just don't speak because they're afraid. And they're afraid partially because governments won't protect them, but they're afraid because they're afraid that what happened today in Paris will happen to them. So it's crucial that we stand up and fight, that we not silence ourselves, that we not self-sense ourselves because of the dangers, because of the dangers of any restrictions to free speech. I see some people are having some trouble getting on the chat. Since you can't hear me, there's no point in me giving you advice, but I guess some of you are responding, so I appreciate those of you responding and typing to those who can't listen and who can't hear. And I guess refreshing is the way to do it. Well, follow Amy here because Amy Peacock is quite experienced at the with these podcasts. I actually have a phone call. I'm not sure from who, but we've got a phone number here without a name, so I'm going to take this first phone call. Let's see if I can make this work. Oops. Hi. Can you hear me on the Yaron Brooks show? Anybody there? I guess not. 703-678-2386. That's who called. You there? No? Okay. Bye. Okay, so back to the issue of free speech. Please call 347-324-3075, 347-324-3075. Okay, so I guess if you call, I see Amy's giving me advice here on some people just call in order to listen. That's fine. I guess if you want to ask a question, there's a way for you to express the fact that you want to ask a question. So sorry about that. As I said, there's a learning curve here. It takes me a little while to get in complete command of all the technology that is going on here. Okay, I assume Amy, you're going to take care of all these people who are having technical problems. You're going to take care of them on the chat. Thank you, Amy Peacock, for doing that. I really appreciate it. But she's the world expert on Blog Talk Radio, given that she has a blog on here. So the whole point of a right to free speech, the whole point of defining that as a political right, is to protect people when they disagree. I mean, if we agree all the time, you don't need a right to protect you because we're just going to agree all the time. We're never going to be offended by one another. We're never going to be We're never going to have any kind of incentive to raise a gun or lift a fist. We're going to be always in disagreement. We're going to be always in agreement by its very nature. The whole point of a right to free speech is to emphasize that the only way to deal with disagreement is through peaceful means. The only legitimate way to deal with disagreement is through reason. It's through discussion. It's through debate. That there is indeed no place, no role for the use of physical force in human relationships. And if we disagree, we can disagree passionately. But we either agree to disagree and go our own different ways, or we engage in a passionate debate about the disagreement to try to convince each other. But there is never, ever a place, a role for violence, for force in resolving those disagreements. And that the government's job, the government's role, is to prevent people from silencing me, to prevent people from silencing you. That's what it means to defend the rights of free speech. Then defending the right of the free speech means that the government has to protect us, you know, peaceful citizens who are not engaged in violence, whether we're expressing opinions that the government thinks appropriate or not. In my view, the government should have no position on that kind of issue. There should be a complete separation, and we'll get to this maybe in a future podcast, but a complete separation between government and ideas in this sense. Government shouldn't have what's appropriate ideas and what's not, what's hate speech and what's not, what's legitimate and what's not in terms of speech. The only role of government is to defend individual rights. And in this context, the only role of government is not to have an opinion about these things. The only role of government is to protect my right to speak on my property using my newspaper, or anybody who's willing to voluntarily allow me to have speech. So you do not, you know, so the role of government is to protect me from people who would use violence against me, who would use violence against me for saying things that might offend them. That's the purpose of, that's you know, what government is there for. Government, unfortunately, throughout history, has been the number one violator of exactly that. It's been the number one user of force in order to silence people. Again, this is just study history. This goes hundreds and thousands of years back, where governments have imposed their will to silence the individual. The United States of America, when it was founded on the exact opposite principle. It was founded on the principle of the protection of these individual rights. That was the purpose of instituting government among men, to protect individual rights, among them free speech. Which means the government shouldn't have an opinion about speech. It just needs to protect us when somebody is threatening force against us. And this brings us to the whole history of if you will, the declining free speech in the West. Because what has happened over the last, you know, 30 years, and maybe there's a longer history for this, so I encourage you to look it up. But again, you know, this is a show I put on the last minute, so we're very much depending on my kind of off-the-cuff knowledge and not so much on research. Although, to really dig into these issues, let me recommend a book, and I'll repeat this recommendation over and over again in the show, I hope, if I remember to. But this is a book by Fleming Rose. Fleming Rose is the publisher of the Danish Cartoons. I'll talk about the Danish Cartoons in a minute. But it's a new book called The Tyranny of Silence, published by Cato. It's on Amazon. You can get it on Amazon in pretty much any format. So I encourage you to go to Amazon, download or buy The Tyranny of Silence by Fleming Rose. And I think today's the day to buy it, not only because it's a fabulous book, not only because it's an important book on an important topic, but today is a great day to show solidarity, to show support for Fleming Rose and the like, for their heroic effort to bring these ideas to the forefront, to fight for the ideas of free speech to make free speech, so central to the debate around Western civilization. So go out, buy Tyranny of Silence by Fleming Rose. So over the last 30 years, we have seen repeatedly the capitulation of the American government and European governments over and over and over again to threats primarily by Islamists, but not only, so threats by them against publishers, against authors, against bookstores, against theaters, against operas, against against art exhibits that dare to say anything negative about Islam. And this is really an issue that has come to the forefront primarily over Islam, although we can talk about the Sony thing in North Korea, because I think this is all kind of a manifestation of the weakness of the West to these threats. And North Korea looks around and says, well, if these guys are being silenced by the Muslims, why not be silenced by us? They're just extrapolating. They're just using the weakness that has already been established. But the fundamental weakness has been towards Islam. And really, the one that comes to the to mind, the first manifestation of this, at least in terms of current American history, if you will, was Salman Rushdie. And this is in... I believe it was 1989. This is under George Bush Sr. So those of you who are big Bush fans, this is under George Bush Sr. And what happened was that Salman Rushdie published a book, which the authorities in Iran, the theocrats, the mullahs, the supreme leader in Iran declared to be declared Salman Rushdie as an apostate, declared him as anti-Islam, and basically offered a reward for anybody who killed him. And indeed, Salman Rushdie, the author, had to go into hiding and was in hiding for years as a consequence. And, he went into hiding, and even the publisher in the United States was threatened by the Iranians. There was a bookstore that I think was selling the book in New York City that was firebombed. And the United States did nothing. The United States basically stayed silent. President Bush, this is what he had to say. However offensive the book may be, inciting murder and offering rewards for perpetration are deeply offensive to the norms of civilized behavior, and opposition on terrorism is well known. In light of Iran's incitement, should any action be taken against American interests, the government of Iran can expect to be held accountable. Yay! Sounds tough. But then, nothing happened. Secretary of State James Baker described Khomeini's call for Mr. Rushdie's execution as regrettable. Notice also that the president starts off what he says as, however offensive the book may be, who cares? It's none of their business, right? It is none of their business. The government's role is not to decide what is offensive and not is what is not offensive. Their goal is to defend Salman Rushdie if he's an American citizen. Their goal is clearly to defend the publishers of the book. Their goal is clearly to defend the book publisher and the bookstore that was firebombed. Indeed, Dr. Leonard Peikoff in 1989 authored a full-page ad that was published declaring the end of free speech in the West. And man, was he was right. What we're seeing today, the massacre of those 12 innocent individuals, those 12 heroic individuals, I would say, for standing up to the threats of the jihadis, of the Islamists, the consequence of caving in on the Rushdie to the Iranians on the Rushdie issue. The consequence of that is the murder of these journalists today. So if anybody has blood on their hands, it's the Bush administration from 1989. You know, they spoke the talk, they talked the talk a little bit while compromising, while being weak, and they did nothing, absolutely nothing, to defend Americans, to defend them against the threat, to protect freedom of speech. There's nothing in George Bush's statement that articulates what freedom of speech actually means. So I encourage you, by the way, all to go to the AynRand.org, to our blog on ARI.AynRand.org. Click on the blog site, and you will find there a link to Leonard Peikoff's statement from 1989. Go read it. As applicable today as it was back then, and you'll get a little sense of history and a little sense of, again, how Ayn Rand's ideas allow these intellectuals, a lot of people like Leonard Peikoff, to predict the future, to really show us, because they understand principles. They understand the principle involved. And therefore, they can show us, if we cave in on this principle, what the consequences will be, and the consequences were manifest today in Paris this morning. So that was Bush Senior, the coward, who basically capitulated to the Iranian mullahs, capitulated to the supreme leader of Iran, did nothing when American citizens were threatened, when American property was destroyed, and allowed this implicit threat to continue. So is it any surprise when the American government will do nothing? Is it any surprise that Sony doesn't want to release a movie because it's afraid? That publishers don't want to publish a book like The Tyranny of Silence by Fleming Rose? For years he tried to get it published in the United States. And, and couldn't because publishers were afraid to do it here. So this is what happens when the government capitulates, when the government defaults on its one responsibility, on the one thing that it's supposed to do right, on its most important singular function: the protection of individual rights, the protection of free speech, the protection of Americans from the threats, the violence of people who would cause us to silence ourselves, to self-censor. The responsibility ultimately for self-censorship. Now, I think most self-censorship is cowardice, but the ultimate responsibility of all self-censorship is the weakness of the government, the government's inability, unwillingness, not inability, unwillingness, because they're certainly able, to protect our rights, to protect us from these threats. And therefore, companies and individuals are afraid, and they're legitimately afraid for their own lives, given the pathetic nature of how the United States government deals with these kind of issues. And let me just say, just because somebody mentioned Jeb Bush in the comments, I think it's Amy, another Bush in the White House is like, you know, it's like my worst nightmare. I can't imagine how bad that could be, given the history of Bush's. Now, this time I think we actually have a phone call with a question, because there's a question mark. As I've told you, if you've just joined, I'm still learning how to use all this. So let's see if this will work. Let's see. Yes, you are now on live on the Iran Brook Show. Do you have a question? Who is this?
Yeah, this is Charles. Hello, Dr. Brook. Can
Hi,
you
Charles.
Hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Yes. Okay. I agree with your assessment about Bush Sr. and his doing nothing in the face of the Salman Rushdie affair. But I think that the problem has gotten significantly far worse since then, especially under Barack Obama. If we can remember, it was Barack Obama who stood in front of the UN and said it's the future must not belong to those who slander the prophet. I wonder how many of the major media outlets are going to replay that speech today. I doubt very few. And it was also Obama. who threw a video maker in jail for the Benghazi as the reason for inciting the Benghazi attack. So this is a long stream of a lot of problematic behavior from our government and the leaders of our government, and just doing nothing in the way that Bush Sr. did would be a massive improvement. So my question to you is, what do you think a president or leader of this country would have to do to start to turn this thing around?
Well, let me get to that. You've kind of preempted me, because I was suddenly going to get to Obama. I was not going to leave him out of this, and I was certainly going to get to that. But let me play out the history here a little bit, because I know Obama is the devil, and I know we want to blame Obama for everything, and he certainly is ideologically the worst president in American history. But I don't want to let any of his predecessors off the hook here. We got to the point of electing Obama. We got to the point where Obama can get away with what he gets away because of the things that previous presidents did, and who were all Republican, who were all considered tough. And as a consequence, Obama just sounds like a Republican. So he's taking it one step further. But this is all consistent with what we've seen in the past. So let me draw that out a little bit, and then let's get to Obama, slam Obama, and then let me get to what I think should have been done in 1989, should certainly have been done, after the Danish cartoons, and I also think it's important to expand this to beyond the United States, because in America things are bad, but let me tell you, things are much, much, much worse in Europe. And one of the scary things about the Obama administration is that he wants, in the left, the radical left at least, wants to turn America into a Europe. We need to understand what that means. And this issue of free speech, and this is the tyranny of silence by Fleming Rose, is primarily about Europe and about the disappearance of free speech in Europe. We need to talk about free speech in Europe. We need to talk about what that means as well, and the default of European governments in defending free speech, to get a real sense of this as a Western civilization phenomena. And look, Western civilization's history, it's the only civilization that's ever protected free speech. I mean, this is the cornerstone of Western civilization, that we protected reason, and we protected reason by, among other things, protecting free speech. But this is the main way in which we protect reason. Again, Western civilization would have never had a scientific revolution, would have never had an enlightenment, would have never had a industrial revolution, if not for the protection of free speech. So this is a cornerstone of Western civilization. So we can talk. I want to talk a little bit about Sweden. I see Patrick Black on the chat is commenting about Sweden. We will talk about Sweden, about what's going on all over Europe, and the attitude, but even more horrific, the attitude towards these cartoonists that's been expressed in Europe over the last few years. I mean, the cartoonists that were killed today, and the way America and American presidents, Obama, and Europeans have their attitude towards these cartoonists, in a sense, basically saying that they're wrong, and therefore, you know, not explicitly calling for their killing, obviously, but, you know, allowing for this view, this attitude that these guys are out of, you know, they're offensive, therefore they're not right, therefore they're fringe, therefore they're, and therefore, ultimately, we don't have to protect their free speech, and therefore, ultimately, it's open season on these people. This is what's implied by all of this. But let me get, so this is George Bush Sr. and with with Salman Rushdie, 1989, and I don't have any concretes here on the Clinton administration, but I'm sure there are some. I'm sure we'll find some if we do a little bit. You know, if I had more time, I'm sure we could dig out some stuff that shows that even when it comes to the Clinton administration, this went on and on. The appeasement of Muslim violence, the appeasement of threats against free speech. I just don't think there is an American government out there in the last 30 years that has done anything to suggest that the American government would stand up and protect the individual's right to free speech, to protect the right of journalists to publish what they believe, to protect the right of cartoonists to draw what they think, and to have somebody who publish it. And if you don't like it, don't buy it. Don't look. Don't publicize it. Don't tweet it. Well, let's jump ahead to the Danish cartoons. And again, I don't want to go through the whole story of the Danish cartoons. I refer you to Tyranny of Silence by Fleming Rose. I also refer you to our website, ari.einrand.org, where you can find a lot of what the Ayn Rand Institute wrote and did after the Danish cartoons were published. We wrote quite a bit. We did a bunch of panel discussions at university campuses. We showed the cartoons on university campuses. I actually did a number of events with Fleming Rose at the time of the publication of Danish cartoons on American campuses. So we saw this as an important issue when the Danish cartoons were published. And, of course, what happened? They were published in this Danish journal that Fleming Rose was the publisher. And there were these massive riots all over the Middle East. There were threats all over primarily Europe, but in the United States as well, against anybody who would republish those cartoons. Indeed, almost no mainstream publication in the world was willing to republish these cartoons. I mean, one of the things that the Muslims have argued against Charlie Hebdo was that they republished the cartoons in France after the riots started all over the Middle East. In the United States, the New York Times refused to publish them. I can't remember if the Wall Street Journal did or didn't publish maybe one cartoon online or something, but almost nobody published them in the United States, in the United States of America. No magazine was published. Now think about what this effect had. What these jihadists then had. They had a clear target. They had the few people out there who published the cartoons then became the targets. Imagine what would have happened if everybody, every major newspaper would have said, we don't necessarily agree with these cartoons, or we even find these cartoons offensive, but in the name of free speech, we are going to publish these cartoons because we will not be intimidated. And by the way, the cartoons are news because there are riots all over the Middle East and there are threats towards Western publishers. This is news. So we're going to publish the cartoons. We're going to put them up online. We're going to have them here. Then the Muslims would have looked and said, oh, everybody's doing it. There's no target. Who are we going to target? Who are the 12 we're going to kill? We're going to have to kill everybody. And that's why I encourage you today on Twitter, on Facebook, on whatever feed, on Instagram or whatever social media, go get the cartoons and publish them. Go get all these cartoons and put them out there. If millions and millions and millions and tens of millions of people put them out there, then there is no – they can't target anybody. This is a way to really show us support for the people who publish them, for the idea of free speech, for the principle of free speech. Show us support. You know, there's a famous scene in the movie Spartacus. And you haven't seen the movie Spartacus. I love that movie. It's a fabulous movie from the 1960s. And in the movie – one of the final scenes, of course, I'm going to spoil this for many of you who haven't watched the movie. So if you haven't watched the movie, stick your fingers in your ears for a minute. The Romans have captured all these slaves that have been in revolution. And in the movie, you know, they're torturing them to who is Spartacus. And Spartacus is about to get up and declare himself because he doesn't want to see everybody else tortured. And one of the characters stand up and say, I am Spartacus. And then somebody else stands up and says, I am Spartacus. And then soon everybody is standing and saying, I am Spartacus. Now, in the movie, of course, the Romans crucify everybody, right? But in reality, the Muslims cannot come after everybody, right? So I am Spartacus. I am Fleming Rose. I am Charlie Hebdo should be our slogan. And in the name of that, we should be publishing these cartoons everywhere. Stand with the guys who have the courage. So this is what happened with the Danish cartoons, you get the riots, you get the threats, you get the self-censorship. And what did the United States government say? Well, George Bush Jr. now, the son, we find them offensive, the cartoons. And we certainly understand why Muslims would find these images offensive. Really? Really, the United States government is taking that position? We understand why Muslims would find these images offensive? I mean, and you guys rail about Obama. I understand why you hate Obama, and I do too. And I understand Obama's worse in some way. But this is from a Republican. This is from a guy who's supposed to understand the Constitution and supposed to understand individual rights, supposed to emphasize. Right? This is the guy who's supposed to be a tough guy. This is the cowboy. This is what destroys America. What destroys America is when we get weakness from the right. Weakness from the left, we can understand. There's an alternative. There's an opposition party. But who criticized Bush for saying this? Nobody. Nobody. Because nobody within his own party would criticize him because, ooh, you have to show solidarity with this is a tough president. But nobody on the left would do it. The State Department issued a statement saying anti-Muslim images are as unacceptable as anti-Semitic images, as anti-Christian images, or any other religious beliefs. None of the State Department's business. You have that opinion as an individual? Fine. Government cannot have an opinion about these things. And by the way, one of the things Fleming Rose points out is that part of this, the opening for the whole anti-hate speech agenda in Europe and the whole oppression of free speech in Europe is the laws against Holocaust denial. So in Germany, for example, it's illegal to be a Holocaust denial. But that's completely wrong of the government. The government has no opinion. The government doesn't protect certain opinions and reject other opinions and protect free speech only when it's correct and reject free speech when it's incorrect. Holocaust denial is evil. It's immoral. It's not the role of government to police morality. It's not the role of government to police truth. It's not the role of government to police speech. Anti-Semitic images are horrific. None of the government's business. Unless it involves a crime, property crimes, like destroying a synagogue or a cemetery or something like this. Unless it involves threatening people, their lives, then it's the government's business. Threats are not speech. Threats are violence. Anti-Semitic images, qua anti-Semitic images, anti-Muslim images, qua anti-Muslim images, Christ, anti-Christ images, anti-Christian images, qua anti-Christian images, the government has no role, has no opinion about these things. Its job is to defend the anti-Semites. It's to defend the anti-Muslim. It's to defend the anti-Christian from those who would silence them. That's its job. Its job is to protect speech, not to protect speech it agrees with. I mean, the founding fathers would be horrified that the State Department of the United States of America would issue such a statement under a Republican administration, under George Bush Jr. Bill Clinton, and this is several years later, so this is not while he was president, he said, I don't have exact citation of where he said this, but he said, none of us are totally free of stereotypes about people of different races, different ethnic groups, and different religions. There was this appalling example in Denmark, these totally outrageous cartoons against Islam. This is a former president of the United States, right? And he's taking the side of rioters, right? Of taking the side of people who threaten people's lives, taking the side of people who want to destroy speech, want to destroy disagreement. Whether you like the Danish cartoons or not is not the point. You defend the principle of having them published. And you, you know, you condemn the principle of using violence against them. You condemn the riots. You condemn the threats. That's Bush Jr. and Bill Clinton. A long line now of American presidents on right and on left. And then, of course, there's now we come to Obama. And, you know, and again, this isn't new. This issue has been around with us for a long time. In 2010, when there was a Florida pastor who threatened to burn Muslim holy books, right? Obama sounded like he had kind of mixed feelings about this free speech stuff. It sounded like he would have liked to stop the pastor from burning these books. Right? Now, again, you can disapprove of the idea of burning books. I don't like burning any books, generally. But again, the government can't stop you from burning books. So this is what Obama says. It's frustrating. My understanding is that he can be cited for public burning, but that's the extent of the law we have available to us. Oh, Obama, if only we had more laws that could restrict people's freedoms, control what they say, stop them from offending Muslims, we would use them and we would get them. I mean, again, an American president, the country that was established on the principle of protecting the right of the individual, the right, individual rights. In 2010 also, this is some examples of just the government defaulting. A cartoonist in Seattle who promoted an Everybody Draw Muhammad Day is now in hiding for her life because she was threatened by Islamic, by Islamic extremists. You know, where's the government defending them? Her name, I think, is Molly Norris. We saw South Park. You remember the South Park episode about the Danish cartoons? Now, this is to 2006, I think. Comedy Central made the producers of South Park censor the depiction of Muhammad. So the South Park animators were brave enough. The South Park animators had no problem drawing Muhammad, showing him on screen. But no, Comedy Central said no because they were afraid. They were cowards. And, of course, they knew that the U.S. government would not protect them. So the statement was, this network's decision was made after concerns for public safety. Right? And if you remember the episode, it's a brilliant, brilliant episode. I mean, I'm not a huge fan of South Park, but this episode you've got to see. Hopefully you can find it on Hulu or Netflix or something. It's the one on the Danish cartoons because the town there decides, ooh, there's this issue, what are we going to do? And they decide to bury their heads in the sand, which is fantastic because that's exactly what the American people have been doing for decades now. So they bring truckloads of sand into town and everybody buries their head in the sand. Beautiful, just perfect illustration of the American attitude to this whole issue. Let's not think about it. Let's bury our head in the sand about it. And, of course, this comes from the top down, from our intellectuals and our politicians all the way down to the common people who unfortunately don't seem to care about these issues. So what you had is as soon as Muhammad comes onto the screen in that episode, he's kind of whited out. He's faded out. You can't see him. So thumbs up to the creators of South Park, thumbs down to Comedy Central for not showing it. They did this again, I guess, in 2010. And this is, again, a repeated phenomenon. And I'm not going to go through all the examples, but there are a ton of them. But I do want to mention one. Let me just find this. And this is the context in which, Obama. So this is because I want to mention Benghazi. If you remember Benghazi, the Obama administration claimed when Benghazi happened, when the U.S. ambassador in Benghazi was killed, and I'm not going to get into the whole Benghazi thing, but I just want to use it from this perspective. They claimed that this was a consequence of riots that were happening around the Middle East because of this YouTube video, right? And, an anti-Islam trailer that they claimed unleashed the violence in the Middle East and ultimately unleashed the violence in Libya. that resulted in what happened in Benghazi. And this is a statement, right? We reject all efforts to denigrate the religious beliefs of others. This is, you know, what does a separation of state and church mean? It means that the government takes no position on religion, including this kind of position. But there is absolutely no justification to this type of senseless violence. None. Okay? And what are you going to do about it? What you do about it is go after the YouTube, the guy who published, who created this video. And the Obama administration not only went after him, but they went after YouTube. Jay Carney, the then press secretary, actually called up Google, who owns YouTube, and tried to get them to take the video off. Price? American companies are self-censoring when some companies are getting phone calls from the White House telling them to take stuff down. I mean, the cowardice, the appeasement, the immorality comes from the top down. It comes from our political leadership. They actually, at the time, linked, so this is during Benghazi, at a White House briefing, Carney actually linked the anti-Islam video and cartoons published by the Paris-based Weekly with the attacks. There was attack today. So he actually, at the time, was criticizing Charlie Hebdo for publishing the cartoons and saying that that was generally part of this anti-Islam thing that led to the Benghazi attack. So again, a direct link between the condemnation by the Obama administration of Charlie Hebdo and in a sense, the sanction that they provide for the kind of action that was taken today. Now, by the way, I'm reading this from an article that was published today in Politico called President Obama Defends Free Speech After Paris Attack. It's kind of defense speech, free speech in quotes. It shows the hypocrisy of Obama by Josh Gerstein. So I recommend looking this article up. He also goes on to quote Carney in saying, obviously, we have questions about the judgment of publishing something like this. They have questions about it. This is from government. Government is a gun. When somebody with a gun says, you know, I have questions about, you know, your behavior. Whoa, that's a threat. We know that these images will be deeply offensive to many and have the potential to be inflammatory. But we've spoken repeatedly about the importance of upholding the freedom of expression that is enshrined in our Constitution. That's meaningless coming from him once he said what he said above. It's meaningless. It doesn't mean a thing, right? What does it mean that they understand upholding freedom of speech when they've just said, what was it? That they question the judgment. Makes me mad. Hillary Clinton was even more ferocious than Obama in denouncing the anti-Islam video around the Benghazi thing. And this is to quote Hillary Clinton. The United States deplores any intentional effort to denigrate the religious beliefs of others. This is it, guys. That's the attack on free speech. That is the end of free speech in America. When government puts itself in that position, what next? The deplorable attacks against unions? What about deplorable attacks that objectivists might commit by attacking religion qua religion? Is that okay? Is it okay to denigrate religion qua religion? What about attacking statism or attacking socialism? How about attacking Social Security? Right? I mean, I'm sure there are a lot of people in America today, who are offended by the fact that the Ayn Rand Institute ultimately, that I and the Institute want to abolish Social Security ultimately. I'm sure that the White House finds that viewpoint abhorrent. Do any of us really have free speech when the President of the United States and his representatives speak out like this? I don't think so. So in the end, the murders today, the blood is on the hands of the political leadership in the West, the American political leadership, going back to at least George Bush Sr., who have condoned Islamic violence, have condoned Islamic threats, have legitimized the idea that it's inappropriate, if you will, to publish offensive material, that have refused to protect the rights publishing this material. Now, I wanted to say a little bit about Europe. Let me just again refer you to Fleming's book. By the way, I just saw somebody posted here on the chat that it's available right now on Amazon for $1.99. Go buy it. $1.99. Everybody can afford it. Make a statement by buying it. Go and buy Fleming Rose's book. The link is on the chat on the chat function on Blog Talk. It's $1.99 on let your friends know, tweet it, Facebook it, get this book out there. But he really illustrates. I'll just point out, you know, because I always get this question about the wonderful place that is Sweden and how wonderful Sweden is. Let me tell you, there's no country that is in greater violation of freedom of speech right now than Sweden is. Sweden has the most oppressive hate speech laws on the books of any country in Europe, any country in the West, I think. A Swedish artist recently who painted some, I don't know, neo-fascist paintings. I mean, horrible stuff. I don't think we should support the art, but this is the whole point. He painted this stuff. He went to jail for 6 months. Jail for painting a painting. I don't care what it illustrates. It was a painting. Went to jail for 6 months. You cannot speak today. Prohibition in Sweden on speaking against immigration into Sweden. So if you speak up against Muslim immigration into Sweden, you can go to jail for speaking. So Sweden, this heaven, this place that Obama and his leftist friends would like to turn the United States into, this is what the reality is over there. This is what it's all about. Wow, this hour's gone by. So what should we do? Well, on a personal level, you know, express yourself. Speak up. Show the cartoons. Express your support for free speech. You know, voice your opinion. Voice your opinion, particularly now. Support those people. Again, even if you don't agree exactly with what they're saying, right now they're under attack. And when they're under attack, the principle of speech is under attack. And if the principle of speech is under attack, then the principle of individual rights, the principle of your life, the sanctity of your life is under attack. Yeah, I'm only going for an hour today. Sorry. I have to be somewhere later today. So I encourage you to speak, defend, post these cartoons. I've got a bunch of cartoons, I think, at the stream in the show today. You can if you follow me on Twitter, please follow me on Twitter. Everybody should follow me on Twitter. Like me on Facebook. You can have access to these images, retweet them, copy them yourselves, get them online, find them, retweet them. As to what our government should do, as to how our government should be defending us, as to how our government should be engaged to defend our freedom of speech, you're going to have to wait until Monday. So Monday, 8 a.m. Pacific time, 8 to 10. Monday, I promise 2 hours. 8 to 10 a.m. Pacific time. I'll be on. We will continue on this topic of free speech. I'll recap some of what we discussed here, but I promise to spend some real time talking about what our government should be doing, what should have been done with Rushdie, what should have been done with the Danish cartoons, how if we'd done that then, none of this would be happening now, how we have to go and defend free speech. It's the essential. It's the primary. It's crucial to our ability to change the world. If you are a supporter of Ayn Rand, if you're a supporter of the Ayn Rand Institute, if you believe in freedom, if you believe in individual rights, it's time to stand up and be counted. It's time to declare yourself Spartacus. And I'll just end with this. I really, there are people out there who fight this fight on a day-to-day basis, who are cartoonists, who are publishing some of this stuff, whose lives are being threatened on a daily basis. I'm proud to call some of these people friends of mine. Whether it's Bosch, who's on here probably today, who has illustrations of Muhammad, who's had his life whose life threatened. Whether it's some of our writers here at the Institute, Ilan Giono, who writes about Islamic totalitarianism and the threat that it poses, and his life has been threatened over the years. Or whether it's somebody like Fleming Rose, who, since the Danish cartoons were published, I'm honored to now call a friend whose life over the last 8 years has been threatened over and over again, and who lives with this threat constantly. And in spite of that, is published this book. In spite of that, appears publicly on television, gives talks. Later this month, in January, there will be two panel discussions with Fleming Rose and Ankar Gate, one in Boston and one in New Jersey. Keep an eye out for those. Those are going to be terrific events. They'll be sold out given what's happened today. I encourage you all to go. They're going to be very exciting. We'll definitely videotape them and post them. But these are heroes. These are heroes that should be celebrated, that should be supported, and particularly at a time right now. These are people who put their lives out there. This is not just most of us, most of the time, this is an intellectual thing. We talk, we speak, but we generally feel pretty comfortable that our lives are not threatened because of what we say. There are people out there who can't say that. Certainly in Europe, but even today in the United States, we've gotten to that sad point. So this show's dedicated to them, dedicated to the people at the front lines of the struggle we face today. I salute you. See you all Monday, 8 a.m. Pacific time. This show will go up on iTunes. It'll also be archived here. Please link. Tweet, post it on Facebook, tell your friends about it. This time we had, 60 people in the live chat. Let's try to get 200 next time. Get the word out. Let's get a massive following to the show. Let's get people listening after the fact to the show. Link, tweet, connect. Have a great week. Fight on. Keep up the battle. See you on Monday. Oh, I didn't do the closing music.
I had to keep up with you with the tweets. I did get the cartoons. I got the Fleming Rose book.
That's fine.
So we got some good traction there. One more. One more. Oh, the show.